Welcome, 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 everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the HockeyThinkTank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. What an episode we have for you guys here today. It's just going to be Jeff and I solo mission on this one. A little bit of a mailbag episode that we've done in the past where we have gone out on social media and asked you guys to write in with some questions that you have that you'd like us to discuss. So went through and got a bunch of them and looking forward to answering your guys' questions here. But before we get to that, let's bring on the talent of the podcast, Jeff Lovicchio. Jeff, what's going on today?
Hot, Carl. just got back from the gym and I'm currently eating 6 hard-boiled eggs.
You're getting soft, just 6? How was your, so we're recording on Sunday night and we are putting this podcast out tomorrow, so it will be unedited. We're rearing and ready to go, so we got to be on top of our toes here today. But we've also been pretty busy. So how was your weekend? What'd you have going on?
I work 7 days a week, Topher. So worked, that's today, worked yesterday, bunch of guys from one of my high school organizations and my makeup group and a weekend crew that I have. So that was really fun getting the boys in. And then last night was one of my guys' 21st birthdays. So a bunch of the guys got together and rented a party bus, obviously being safe, driving us around so nobody has to drive. And it was a great time. But the one guy, I'm not going to say any names, the one guy gets the party bus off of Craigslist.
Okay.
This thing was the most gangster, quote unquote, party bus I have ever seen. We were worried the bus might just blow up, you know, going from bar to bar, but we wound up living and having some great stories to tell. So that was a pretty fun thing. And, you know, good to build like the group camaraderie, you know, even though it's a summer workout group, it's all very high level guys that this was with. And, you know, those kind of things that they can go in the gym and laugh about and talk about on Monday and Tuesday, it just kind of brings them together. And, you know, it's just like a team in the summer. Like that's what I try and build through each of my sessions. So it was kind of like team building. I looked at it and just had a ton of fun with the boys.
That's awesome. I thought you said, oh, and we ended up living, so that was good.
What's his 5-year plan? Don't die?
Sid, good old Sid.
How was your weekend? I just saw on Twitter your bro just threw a video up of you absolutely making a goalie look pretty dumb. I'm sorry, goalie, but you did something pretty nasty in your in your charity game in New York. How was that?
Oh man, it was awesome. So it's the 5th year we've done a charity game here at Cornell. And basically what we do, we get a bunch of NHL players, a bunch of Cornell alumni, a bunch of local business people to come out and we do a charity game that benefits Racker, which is a school that provides much needed services for kids with special needs. And this is year 5 that we've done it. And over the 5 years, we've actually raised over $500,000 for the school. Yeah. So it's pretty fun. And our big names this year, we had Dustin Brown. He's an Ithaca kid. So he came and played. Actually, his little kid played too in the game, which is really funny. He ended up scoring a hat trick. He's like a peewee. So that was pretty funny. And
so Alex, you guys are the same size?
Actually, I'm a little taller than him, so screw you.
congrats. Boom, roasted back on me.
Yeah. And then Alex Tuck played for the Vegas Golden Knights, lives in Syracuse, grew up in Syracuse too. So those were our two kind of big names. Joe Neuwendijk, NHL Hall of Famer, was here as a coach. And it's just a really fun event. A lot of great people, and we raise a lot of money for a great cause. But yeah, I came in the shootout, and I'll post it on social media here in the morning. But had fun with it. So
you should make it like the little things from last night. And then it just says like, I nipped. That would be so funny.
I don't know if I have that in me, man. I'm not.
No, I totally would do that if it was me, but that's not you.
That's so funny. No, it was cool. It was a lot of fun. I mean, one of the things we try to do is make it a fun event for everybody. And we typically get anywhere from 1,500 to 2,000 fans at the games. That's about what we had last night too. And I think last night we raised about 125K. So,
wow,
really fun stuff. Really fun stuff. And it's a great org. That's the best part about it. The great organization and, you know, having family members that have special needs. I know firsthand where that money goes and the kind of services and support that that place, you know, provides for people. And so we're very, very happy to do it, to team up Cornell Hockey and Racker.
Yeah, that's effing unbelievable, man. Congratulations to you and everyone who helped with that. I mean, that's just so much money. That is, wow, very cool. Very, very cool. Next year, if you need an ex-hockey player with ruggedly handsome good looks to set up a kissing booth for charity, you know, I'll donate my services.
Oh, God, ew.
I was actually thinking, I don't know what, I was watching a movie where like they were joking around, they like did that. And I was like, that is actually so disgusting. If you think about that,
yeah,
like just lining up for a kissing booth, like, ew, that's just, oh.
Yeah.
Anyways.
To all the listeners, you're very happy that you didn't get to see that. Be happy that you didn't have to see that, I should say. But yeah, well, you are playing in a charity game coming up. We've got one in 3 weeks from today on August 4th in Chicago, playing for Special Olympics Chicago that we're putting together. So that should be fun. You excited to come on up and play? Me and you, we're on the same team. I put us on the same team for that one.
Yeah, buddy.
Except, connection back together.
Oh my God, Toph, I'm going to be so bad. It's going to be unbelievable. The last two games I played in were with the Blues alumni. And like before those, I was like, I hadn't skated for like 6 months. And I was like, okay, like if I'm playing with the alumni, like I got to go out and like hit some practices. So like with my team, I put my gear on for like 3 straight weeks and practice with them because I didn't want to embarrass myself. Because I, dude, if I don't use it, I lose it real quick. And it's been like the last Blues alumni game I played in, I don't even know, it was like 2 months before their season ended. So it's been a long time. I'm going to be so bad and I don't have time to go skate right now because I'm working so much. So I just, oh, it's going to be, nobody judge me on this game that comes
to
watch.
You know what I think we need to do? Seriously, I think we need to start doing your $20 fine instead of humble brags. Your $20 fine is now going to be, I have no time for anything because I work so much. Because I feel it's like 9 times an episode.
Dude, I mean, you're like, well, why don't you have a voice? Well, because I work so much. Why are you going to be terrible at hockey? Well, I work so much, I can't go skate.
No, it's going to be awesome, man. And the two teams, it's going to be Team Kendall Coyne Schofield. That's the team we're on. And Team Pauls, Josh Pauls, Fudzy Pauls. So this game is really, really special because, obviously, well, for number one, it's all the proceeds are going to Special Olympics Chicago, which does amazing things for kids with special needs in Chicago. And number two, this game is all about inclusion. So the stars of this game are going to be Kendall Coyne Schofield, who is one of the top women's players in the world, arguably the top women's player in the U.S. And then the other team is Josh Pauls, the top sled hockey player in the U.S. and possibly in the world. So again, we're going to have NHL players, we're going to have former NHL players, we're going to have guys like you and I. The Blackhawks alumni is getting involved. I actually just got a text today. Dale Tallon, the GM of the Florida Panthers, is going to be coaching at the event. So it's going to be a great event. Again, we've done this. This is the third year we're going to do it. And so if you want to find out more about it, go to sochicago.org and you can get tickets. And, you know, even if you go to the website just to find out about some of the great things that they're doing with their programming and stuff, it's again, much needed for kids with special needs.
That's very cool. Can't wait.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's get to the mailbag questions. And at the end, we'll hit the coaching conference, the player development conference that we're doing. What do you think?
Yeah, love it. You're the captain of the ship.
All right. You got first question, though. What do you got? Let's hear it.
Yeah. First question is probably my favorite. This comes from John Lounsbury, our boy with the gel sticks. He says, my question to the podcast is, and he put 5 dots because he apparently doesn't know an ellipses is supposed to be 3. That's okay, Lounsy. Don't worry. If you were going to a wedding, name the top 5 songs that get you out of your seat. his number one would be September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Lounsey, I'm also not old enough to know that song. I'm sorry. You're dating yourself. No, that's a good tune. If I was going to go top, the number one for me is definitely Shout. If I hear that, now wait a minute. Oh, buddy, it's over.
You've been so good to me.
I'm giving her on the dance floor. You know it. What about you?
I love that. I'm all Motown, man. I love, like, one of the best weddings I ever went to. You know Walsh, Chris Walsh, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so junior teammate of mine, one of my really good buddies. And so he's from Detroit. His wife is from Detroit. And they got married downtown Detroit. And the band that played literally played Motown every song. And it was one of the most fun weddings I've ever been to. So you give me a little, like, Build Me Up Buttercup type stuff. Little Temptations, little Supremes. Like, that gets me going. I think that's unreal. And then, actually, you know what a sneaky good wedding song is that you will get made fun of by going to the DJ or the band to ask for, but every time it gets everybody out on the dance floor? And this needs to be a song that's like a 11 o'clock at night type song, like not to start the night. But Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way. Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. End of the night wedding song.
Classic.
Every time I get the stink eye from the DJ, like, are you kidding me, buddy? And then he plays it, and then he's like, okay, I got it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with some BSB early 2000s. They're coming back. They're doing their thing again. But
really?
Yeah, I feel like I saw them on – that they're back on tour. I don't know. Yeah, you can't go wrong with some Backstreet Boys, some NSYNC, you know, something like – just some pop, good old pop. Good. I like oldies and pop. I don't like dancing to like rap music unless it's like, you know, a 90s rap where you can like actually dance to it. That the music these kids listen to now, like the dance moves they do in between sets when we were playing rap in the gym. I'm like, what are you doing? You look like someone electrocuted you.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, I chirp them all the time for their music. They probably think I'm old for saying that.
I'm not a huge fan of it anyway, but let's get to some hockey talk now. What do you say?
All right.
So this was one, I thought this was really interesting. I got this one on Twitter from Jason Ronan. And he said, if either of you became director of hockey for a town program, what would be the top 3 to 5 ideas you'd stress from the beginning with coaches, parents, and players? Awesome question.
That is a really good question. You take that one first.
I figured that was going to come. I figured
I'll piggyback off you, baby.
Okay. So here's what I would do. Number one, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, we feel like a majority of the youth organizations, especially at the AAA level, but I think this is pretty mainstream through, you know, tier one, tier two, tier three, is that a lot of it, there's not really a big development plan for the entire organization. Right? It's just a dad coach at each level that just kind of takes charge and kind of does their own thing. Which, again, people have said that that is one of the biggest problems, dad coaches. And, you know, so the first thing I would do is I would write a development plan, things that we want each team to accomplish when it comes to skills, when it comes to culture and all that kind of stuff, almost like a little Bible that they have to abide by and just set an entire culture for the entire organization. I think just kind of broad strokes, that would be the first thing that I would do. The second thing that I would do is I would put, like, I don't know what you call it, like a manifesto or something, but a best practices of communication between coach and parents. Like, and you put it in writing, and these are our guidelines if you're a coach and you want to talk to parents. These are our guidelines if you're parents and you want to talk to coaches, just to kind of streamline that process. Because I think if the communication between parents and coaches were good, that just, it sets you up for success. And if it's not, it sets you up for failure. I think that communication is so important. And then the last thing I would do is I would invest in coaching education. I think that is so sorely missed in I would have like monthly meetings where all the coaches had to get in a room and they would have to present to each other on things that they're doing, whether it was systems, whether it was skill development, whether it was culture, whatever it may be, but find a way, you know, categorically and consistently to make your coaches better. Those would be my 3 things that I would do. I had that question, so I kind of thought of that before the podcast, but those would be the 3 things I would do. What do you think about that?
Sorry, I was munching an egg. And we're live still. Okay. I honestly think that was an unbelievable question from Jason. I would agree with the somehow setting up a system for communication. Like, I mean, I just think that is so massive. Like, I feel very lucky that I'm the assistant coach and not the head coach, because I know how many emails head coaches get, and with good reason. You know, parents are trying to do the best for their kids and things like that, but definitely I could see it getting overwhelming. So I don't know what that system would be. I'd bring in someone smarter than me, such as yourself, to figure out what would work the best for all parties involved. But I think the number one thing I would do is, if I became like everyone had to listen to what I said, I would get all of the coaches and the people on the board and all that together. And like, I think this is such a big deal that people don't like look at how big of a piece this is to aiding in the development of their children. Not even just talking about hockey, just like,
are you actually going to get to your point, or are you just
gonna, yeah, I am, man. investing in the organization's like cultural ideas and motto, like that would be massive. And it would have to start with everyone on the board and all the coaches and the hockey director, and being like, these are our core values as an organization. This is what we want these kids to get out of this from a life standpoint, and then also a hockey standpoint. And then those are just always being reinforced through signs in the rink, and the coaches always having to talk about those things, and, you know, respect and all those things that are going to make good adults, human beings, good citizens. I think that would be number one. And then two would be the thing that you talked about, with talking with the parents and the coaches. And then three, I agree with you again, coaching clinics and seminars, like get coaching education in there as much as you can, because everything rolls downhill. You have bad coaches, you're not going to get as good of players.
Amen. No, yeah, I think coaching education is so important. Just getting everybody on the same page and having a big culture. I think that's kind of the theme that both of us have kind of talked about here in this. So yeah, Jason Ronan, great question. Vex, what's your next one? You're up.
That was a really good question. This is a great question from Harris Vetterman from Twitter. He said, how hard should parents push their kids U10 to U14 age range in the off season? Off ice training, watching games, exercises, et cetera. Thanks. It's a really good question, Harris, because I can only imagine, I don't have a child, but I can only imagine that if he wanted to play sports and he's like, I want you to help me get better, I would probably be hard to not push him too hard, but you know, you got to find a sweet spot, I think. And I think the main thing that you need to think about is it has to be the kid wanting to do everything. If you're pushing him to do things, I don't think that is a good thing. If he's always like, I want to get better, I want to go skate, I want to do this, and you want to help him facilitate those things, absolutely, yes. Also doing other sports and things like that, that'll make him a better hockey player, but it's got to be all on the kid. If you're pushing him out the door into a trainer, he's not going to want to be there. He's not going to get good results. And then also it might stress your relationship with your child. I've actually seen it far too many times in just a short few years I've been coaching.
It's funny. Like, I think one of the things about parents with their kids when it comes to these things is that you don't have to force them to sign up, but once they sign up, you force them to go. You know, like, you made a commitment to do this.
Yeah.
You gotta follow through on your commitment. You know what I mean? Because that's one thing that I've actually talked to a lot of parents about, is that they don't want to push them to do X, Y, or Z. But once they say they want to do X, Y, or Z, and then they commit time, money, whatever it is, to whether it's another sport, whether it's a camp, whether it's a clinic, whatever it may be, then it's like, hey, like, you made a commitment, you got to do it now.
That's a phenomenal point, because my parents always did that with me. Like, not just hockey or sports or anything. It was like, they were always like, my mom was always like, if you make a commitment, you will go to it. Like, you gave them your word. That's really interesting. I never even realized she was doing that. Good call. Good call, Topher.
But I saw a tweet. This must have been like, I don't know, 6 months to a year ago, and I can't remember who the NHL player was, but it was the dad talking about how there was like some like drop in spring hockey stuff. And it, maybe it was something that we like we were talking about right now where it's they actually signed him up to go. But then the NHL player at 13 said, "Dad, I don't want to go today. I want to go hang out with my friends." And the dad said something to the effect of like, he wanted to make him go, but then at the same time, he wanted to let his kid be a kid too. And he was thinking like, well, if I forced him to go, is that going to make him not want to do it? And then, you know, like you said, go downhill and put him on a trajectory that way. But no, he was like, hey, my kid wants to go hang out with his friends. So he actually said, yeah, go hang out with your friends. So I can see that side of it too. That's a tough question. You know, like, some,
you gotta, it's gotta be kid by kid.
Yeah. You know?
It's got to be kid by kid. It like for me, if I told my parents I had a goal, they would not push me. Like if I was like sitting on the couch, let's just say, and I told them I was going to go for a jog, they wouldn't like come over and be like, "You need to go for a jog, Jeff, because you want to make that team." They would be like, "Did you do your things to achieve your goal, to get closer to achieving your goal today?" Like that kind of thing, like manipulate me, quote unquote, you know, like, "Oh, hey, you know, I know you had that thing you're supposed to do once a day for, to reach that goal. You're trying to make that team. Did you do that stuff today?" They probably would come over and do that. And then I would be like, "Oh yeah, I need to do my thing. You know, don't be lazy." Like, I think that's probably what they would do rather than, "Hey, did you run today? Did you do your 10 push-ups?" You know, that kind of thing.
I think those, but I do think those kind of conversations are really important for parents and kids to have. Like for parents to say, "Hey, like if you really have a dream of doing X, Y, or Z, whatever that dream is, it ain't easy, you know, and there's certain things you have to do to get better. And there's other kids all around the world that are, that have the same dream as you do. So like, I'm not forcing you to go to X, Y, or Z or whatever, but there's other kids that are of similar ability to you that are going."
Yep.
So just understand that. And who knows, because, and it depends, who knows, it might depend on the day too. Maybe there's a day where you can push your kid, and maybe there's a day where, you know, "Hey, I got to pump the brakes here and let my kid do something else." But it's, I think it's certainly a gray area question. And I think parents can make that call because they know their kids a lot better than we do. But from a blanket statement, it's certainly, you know, part of the question is, do not force your kids to play hockey 24/7, especially in the summer. Make them play other sports. Make them hang out with their friends. Allow them to do other things. I mean, we've talked so much on this podcast a lot about how having balance is so important for a kid's development, both, you know, in the rink, mentally, socially, emotionally, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, totally agree. Totally agree. Yeah, that is a really tough question. I mean, that is not black and white. There's a lot of gray area there. Yeah,
I agree. I feel like we were just talking out loud for that one because it can go to so many different directions. So hopefully we provided at least a little bit of perspective anyway.
Yeah.
On what we think. But yeah, great. Great question. Another great question. All right, my turn?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Trevor D on Twitter, TDC_hockey, said, "What are some underrated skills that players and coaches are not teaching or working on enough?" Can I take this one first?
Go ahead.
Passing. Passing, 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 passing. Oh my gosh. I go on Instagram, go on Twitter, go on whatever. And you look at all these skill coaches doing all this stuff and, you know, they're stick handling and they're doing all this, you know, tight turns and all that. Like, and that stuff's great. Don't get me wrong, but it's maybe 10% where I see a drill where there's a pass being made. And the teams that pass the most and the teams that pass the best are the teams that win. The players that know how to get to open spots and the players who know how to anticipate and pass the pucks and then how to execute passing, making tape-to-tape passes flat, all that. Oh my gosh, passing, 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 passing. Rant over.
Okay. I would, obviously I agree with that. You know, I see that. I was coaching U18 and there were times where I was just like, God, like, it's like when you give a pass, like you, it's, Yeah, that, you know, that old saying they used to always say when we were coming up, like, passes come from the heart. And it's like, are you gonna? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. We used to say that all the time. Passes come from the heart. Like, if somebody gave a bad pass, and look, usually you look at the guy passing, and it's because he doesn't care. He doesn't care, or he doesn't know to care that, okay, I got to set my teammate up in a good position to catch this puck. It's got to be in front of him, or he's got, you know, it's got to be where he wants to catch it. In stride, all these things. And it's like, so you got to care when you make passes. And I just think that kids, like you said, there's no emphasis on it. They kind of don't think about it. They're like, oh, if I don't have the puck, if I'm not doing things with the puck, then I can be like,
I feel
less detail oriented.
I feel like in practices, and this is even at the higher levels too, you know, when you do your flow drills, they kind of do it. Like, people think of those drills as just kind of like warm-up drills. Like the way that Schaaf used to talk about Cornell, is like, no, those are skill drills. Because you're working on your passing, which is one of the most fundamental and important skills that you can have as a hockey player. Like, those first two, three drills that you're doing, if it's flow, whatever you want to call it, like, those are important drills because you're getting puck touches and you're getting passes and you got to call for pucks. Like, that's another thing, communication, underrated, right? Like, I would stop practice and make my team do push-ups if kids weren't calling for the puck. And you could tell in a practice, like, for all the coaches, that are, the next practice you run, I want you to not say anything if kids aren't calling for the puck and see what the energy level is like. And then you make them call for the puck and you see what the energy level is like for a practice. It is night and day every time. So there's my little experiment for everybody. And actually, before you go on for your next one, I want one other one, playing with your head up. Playing with your head up is like the most important. I've said this a lot, but like, it's so important. One of the most important skills that you can have, because it allows you to scan. It allows you to survey what's going on. It allows you to do so many different things and see what's unfolding right in front of you. So shoulder checking, having your head up when you have the puck, always scanning the ice to see where things are going. So important. And if I'm a coach, I'm saying that all the time. Head up, head up. Like, I was at Hardy's camp, right, just last week, and Brandon Nerado, one of the top skills coaches in the world, he's a skills coach in the NHL. Like, we literally did a drill where guys were working on their edges and stuff, and I was standing there holding up fingers, and they had to shout out how many fingers I was holding up. And these are, you know, some of the top younger players in the country that are at this camp. Like, it's so important. Keep your head up.
It's massive, man. I 100% believe that, because no one taught me that when I was younger, and I had some pretty tough tunnel vision for the levels I was at. Like, for being a professional, like, my vision was not as good as other guys, and I know that. And you know, I worked on it when I got to college and pro, like, as much as I could to get better. But like, yeah, that is, I say that in practice last year, literally every single drill. And it's just like, I wish I could have electrodes on the guys, and when they would put their head down in practice, I could zap them, because it just, they would go every time. These are 18-year-olds, you know, the best 18-year-olds in our city that are still not playing juniors. And they just, you know, they'll look up when I'm saying it, and then 1 minute later you look over, their head's back down, heads back down, heads back down. And it's just like, that's a habit, and it's hard to work on that. But like you said, those first few shooting drills, I mean, those are a chance to work on, you know, your passing, your stick handling, your shooting in stride, calling for the puck. And I love what you said about being loud on the ice and talking, and then how much more energy there is on the rink. Like, I was smiling through that whole thing, because that was exactly how I played every day. The first drill, I'd be going first and I'd be screaming for pucks, like, so loud to just get the boys laughing and going and energetic. Then the next guy does it, and energy feeds and energy builds, and energy begets energy, man. Like, that's so true. I love that you said that.
Yeah. And I want to just add one thing to the, you know, the head up thing. That's why I think people need to be careful with Power Edge Pro, because, you know, Power Edge Pro is cool, right? With the implements on the ice and all the stuff that they do in the programming. And obviously McDavid is big in marketing it. They have some NHL guys that are doing it, but watch kids as they're doing it. And a lot of them have their heads down. And if you are a Power Edge Pro program or something that you believe in, that's fine. I don't love it, because I think it teaches kids to have their head down just kind of naturally, because they're looking at the implements right in front of them. If you are going to do it, I would be like yelling at the kids all like, head up, head up, head up, head up, head up. Just a little bit of a disclaimer there, because, you know, I see some of the videos, and I think with the, you know, the NHL guys, they can do it in their sleep. But I've been on the ice with kids doing that stuff, and a lot of them are doing it head down, and that's just a terrible habit to have.
It is. I mean, we all know, we've all played with those guys who have terrible tunnel vision. You know what I mean? And they're the worst to play with because you're like, I'm never going to get
the horse blinders.
Yeah. Like just straight looking down a narrow tunnel, a narrow hallway, and they can't see anything outside straightforward. And real quick, like to something, a way to work on that also is in the gym, my guys and girls have their head up the entire workout, whether we're doing agility, running, sprints, like lifting, like anything, like your head is up, your eyes are up, just because, again, it's a habit and it's something you always, riding the bike. So many people, what do they do when they start going hard? They look down. That's going to be a habit you're going to translate into your sports. Keep your head up, keep your eyes up, and always be scanning. It's just another skill you can be working on.
Love that. Love that off the ice stuff too. That's pretty cool. All right, we beat that one to a dead horse.
She gone.
He gone. All right, what do you got? What's your next one?
I know we've talked about this one, but I want to talk about it again because a woman named Noreen Ash sent it to me. She said, how do you navigate through the gazillion emails inviting your son to this camp and that camp? Which are worthwhile and which are just money grabs? And I know we've talked about this a lot, but I think we should just touch on it quickly because we talked about it a lot and then I still get this question all the time. And it's because parents care and they're trying to help their son.
Yeah, Noreen. I've actually coached her son. Good kid. Yeah. What do you think? Go ahead.
I mean, I know that you obviously have more experience in this than me because you were a recruiter and you got to see all this stuff and talk to all these kids firsthand. Where are you going? What are you getting? So you know way more than I do about this. I'm just getting into this now. But I do know that it seems like all of my guys that junior A teams had serious interest in, they talk to a scout face-to-face on the phone or via email, like conversations back and forth, and then they wanted them to come to camp. So for those higher level guys that are like for sure going to play juniors, like you'll know if a team wants you. So you'll go to camps where you're talking to the coach. For the guys who nobody really talked to, I would, first of all, get all the teams lined up on your table or something and look at them and then maybe go through what your position is and see how many guys are losing from the year before, because odds are you're going to have to go to camp and battle a little bit more since you're coming in as a little more of an unknown. So if you see a team had four guys, you know, that are all leaving to go play college hockey and you're a left winger, maybe that's a team you want to try out for because there might be more spots. I mean, that's just... And then it all depends on how much money you're willing to spend to try and help your son get to that next goal. If I was a millionaire and my son was on the bubble and he was like, this is my dream, I'd spend as much money as I could to help him achieve that dream. So it's kind of like, what's it worth to you?
Sure. So here's the thing, because we've definitely talked about this, but it is important. It's that time of year right now too, right? Where a lot of that kind of stuff is going on. I think you can tell when it's a generic email, right? Like enter your son's name here and then it just gets sent out. Those are money grabs, I think. For the most part, those are money grabs. I think if you're talking about wanting to make a team, like if you're going to go to a camp to try and make a team, unless that coach has called you, you know, on the phone and expressed interest and knows about the strengths and weaknesses of your son or your daughter, knows the coach, has talked to the coach and like done their research and stuff like that. You know, most junior teams, specifically, they know what their roster is going to be the next year for the most part. And you're going to camp, there's some spots open, I would say, but a lot of them kind of know, right? So all these pre-draft stuff and, you know, all that kind of stuff, if you're getting a generic email from a pre-draft kind of thing, chances are it's, you know, it's an email to try and get you to pre-draft camp so the owner can make or the coach can make some money, right? So I think watch out for the generic emails. Again, know when your kid is being actually recruited versus just get one email and that's all you hear from somebody. And then I think another thing too is just word of mouth. So find people that have gone to X, Y, and Z camp. Maybe it's not a trial, but just other camps, because people are getting asked to go to these exposure camps. Those are huge now. So word of mouth, and ask people if their kids have enjoyed going to that before, for the people that have gone to too. So, you know, do your research and kind of understand when the emails are generic versus when it's actually kind of like recruiting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. But what if you're one of those people who, like, you were a fourth liner at midget major or midget minor, and you're looking to make a junior team, and you're going to be somebody who hasn't been talked to yet, but you've worked so hard to get better over the summer, and now maybe you have a chance with your skill level. Like, what then? Where do you go? Do you think just go to a main camp, or do you think you have to go to a pre-draft camp and all these things?
Call the coach. You know, call the coach and say, hey, I'm Jeff Lavecchio from St. Louis. Have you heard of me? If not, this is who I am. I want to make your team. What spots are available? What kind of roles are you looking for? I think I can fill those kinds of roles. Send them game tape. You know, be the best advocate for yourself. It's very rare for a kid to show up at a junior tryout without the coach knowing who they are and make a team. Right. But if they have a little bit of an idea and they know to look for you, because tryouts, like, especially when they're in the summer, they're not very good. Right. Like, it's kind of summer hockey. People are trying to do their own thing. It's not really hockey that they're playing. It's more like individual trying to look good type hockey. So it's hard, especially for kids who are, like, you're talking about the fourth liners that might not have the skill of the topper. Did I just say topper? Of the top kind of guys. Right. So, you know, take initiative and be your best advocate. And I think the more research that you can do and the more you can put yourself out there, the better off the decision you'll be able to make.
I love that. Call the coach. Absolutely love that. Boom. Do it.
All right. Should we move on to the next one?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So Paul Conboy, this is an interesting one. I'd love to hear what your kind of thought is. I'd love for some of the terminology used to be explained. I've been playing for 35 years and coaching for 10 and haven't heard of stick pressure anywhere. One of your guests said bunny play also once. So what are some kind of terminology that's being talked about today that might not be mainstream or whatever?
Well, I mean, I read that. I was very surprised that Tim has been in hockey that long and he's never heard the term stick pressure. Tim, that's when you use your stick to pressure a guy with the puck. If you skate at a guy with your stick up in the air, you're not able to make a play on him until you hit him. Okay. But if you use the length of your arm, which is your shoulder to your fingertips, plus your hockey stick, you know, you're going to get there. You know, for me, I'm guessing that my hockey stick was probably like, I don't know, 5'8", and my arm is, I have no idea, 2.5 feet. So, like, I'm getting to that guy. I can get touch the puck. Do the math. What is that? 7-8 feet sooner. So
carry the two.
Yeah. So stick pressure is massive. Stick pressure also is closing lanes on the ice while you're forechecking or backchecking. If you're a guy who's in the middle of the ice on your neutral zone forecheck, if your stick's up in the air, that team can pass the puck through you. If your stick is always on the ice and you're always keeping it, you know, stick on puck parallel with it, even if it's 20 feet away from you, you're going to be in that guy's passing lane. And now he has to sauce the puck, or he has to get off a bad pass. You break it up, you go down the other way, pass it to Lavecchio, he shoots, he scores. So stick pressure is massive. I don't know what he's talking about. Bunnies. Do you remember that?
Yeah, no, I don't. I'm not sure about that.
Only bunny terminology that I can think of in hockey would be like puck bunnies. And that's like a term that boys give the girls who just follow around, you know, hockey players,
guys like Jeff Lavecchio. No. I think what he might've been talking about is like a buddy pass. You know, when you get a pass, like, you know, when you're kind of looking straight up ice and you're looking like your toes are pointed up ice and you're looking back and you get a suicide pass,
defenseman,
and you get absolutely clobbered. I've heard of like a buddy pass. Maybe that's what he was talking about. Yeah. But I have a few things written down here, just like little terminology stuff that, I don't know, it's kind of like buzzwords nowadays that people are talking about. you know, one, there's like 8 million different sayings for back check now, you know, like tracking and back check and back pressure and all that kind of stuff. So, but I think it's important because sorting things out on the back check is, you know, one of the best team, not necessarily system, but best team concepts that you can do. We used to do a ton of that in college.
That's massive.
Yeah. And some teams do it differently, right? Like if you're coming back on the back check, there's some teams, actually a lot of them have a marker now of the red line. So if you're a forward and you're back pressuring, some do red line, some do blue line. So the forward is going to back pressure the guy with the puck all the way to the blue line. Let's say your defensive blue line. And as soon as you get to the defensive blue line, if you don't have them yet, you pass that guy off to the D and now you're looking for any trailers coming through. Some teams actually do it to the red line, especially with the 1-1-3 neutral zone forecheck, especially like with the F1 coming back and angling. If you can get him by the red line, do it. If not, get the next wave to do it. So, you know, track back pressure, sorting it out on the back check. Another one that people are talking about a lot is where are your toes pointed, right? Where
Robbie Shrimp.
Right? So he talked about it in a lot of different ways, but, you know, certain ways that you can talk about it is if you're a winger in the defensive zone, you never want to have your toes pointed up ice north or south. You always want to have your toes pointed east or west so you can see the whole play that's in front of you. If the puck is down low, you can watch the puck and you can also have your head on a swivel and you can watch where your defenseman is so you can be in that shot lane as well. So again, defensively, a lot of times in the D zone, especially for the wingers, you want to have your toes pointed east, west. And then a lot of things, you know, in transition, getting your toes pointed in a certain way. When you're angling, right, you want to get your toes starting to point north, going back east, west, going back south. So there's a lot of different ways that you, but a lot of people are talking about where your toes are pointed, as you're playing the game.
That was a massive point you just made too. And,
that's all I do.
A lot of my kids on this team, it is true. A lot of kids on my team this year had a lot of trouble with this that were wingers, finding where the puck is and then finding where your point man is. Like that is so massive. And if you can find a way to stay parallel with him as much as possible, like kind of, you got to kind of make like a 90 degree angle between the puck, you and the defenseman you're covering, and then know when to slash back towards your net slash the wall, the dot, to cut him off if he winds up walking off the wall, but always knowing where that D-man is. As soon as I learned how to use those angles on the ice with the puck in there, and that helped me with how low and how high I should also be, north and south, and then where's the D-man east and west, finding him and staying kind of in a 90-degree angle. It made playing defensively so much easier, and you block so many more shots because you're always in that D-man's lane. You don't have to like slide and skate as he's coming at you shooting.
Yeah.
If that makes sense with the angles.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's important to just survey and know what's going on the ice at all times. Right. And again, we've talked about shoulder checks a million different times. So I think that's massive. I think another kind of buzzword that's being talked about a lot nowadays is deception. So providing the player that you're playing against with misinformation, before you're going to make a play, right? So if you're a defenseman going back on a retrieval and you're getting to the puck at an angle, are you using your body and you're using the way that you're pointing your skates to kind of make the forward or the forechecker think you're going one way and then boom, you're going the other way to make a play. As a forward coming up the ice, don't skate straight. You know, skate on angles, you know, a little bit more east-west with your crossovers, provide misinformation. And that's something that Stan actually used to talk about all the time when I was playing for him in like Pee-wees and Bantams. Like he was a big in the head fake. Use your whole body when you're coming up the ice or if you're in a, you know, in a tight, small area game type situation. Like if you're going to try and fake somebody out.
Sick head fakes. Now I think about it. You had sick head fakes.
Oh yeah. And Adam Nicholas has talked about it too when we've had him on. Right. And it's not head fake. It's like a freaking full body fake too. So like when we would do our skill drills, like around cones and tires and when we were doing small area games with Stan and stuff, like we would have to like use our entire body. And if we didn't, somersault, do it please. Right. So again, it's providing misinformation to the defender or the person that you're playing against by using your body physically, using your head, using your shoulders, using your torso to make them think you're doing one thing and then doing another.
Yeah. Oh man, it's funny because I didn't have like the hands that you had. Like my hands just were never, no matter how much I worked on, I never had very good hands. But so instead of using that skill, I started using like deception skills. Like I'd always fake shots because I shot all the time. So like D-man would always think he's going to shoot because this idiot will shoot from anywhere on the ice. But then because I knew they would know me and see that I was like always leading the league or leading the team for sure in shots, I would do a lot of fake shots and then use my speed to get around a guy because, you know, I couldn't stick hand around him, but that's how I got to use a different skill. And dude, deception, it's so massive. Like going into a corner, if you're the first guy and you know there's a D-man behind you, like he's thinking, okay, lunchtime, like I'm going to murk this guy. If you go straight at that puck, it is super easy for the D-man. If you come on an angle and you know, like you just said, do like a full body fake one way and then turn into the glass. And if you even jump up on the glass a little bit and let the D-man get close to you, you slingshot yourself back on the D-man. That's when you see those D-men hit you. So that is a really good way. Like let them get close to you instead of like you just letting them lunch you. No, right as they're about to hit you, if you jump up in the glass just a tiny bit, boom, slingshot. You're going to get right on top of them. You got the puck and you're going.
I like it. I like it. It's so true. One other one I want to talk about, and I think it's one that's not talked about enough, and that's poise. Poise with the puck, right? And like having patience, because again, we live in a fast, fast, fast world, and there is a place for that. I feel like I'm banging on like playing fast. I do think it's so important to think fast, especially the levels you go up, the less time and space you're going to have. So the more important it is that you think fast. But at the same time, some of the best players in the world, they know when to play fast, and they know when to show patience, and they know when to show poise. And I think if we can teach our players that poise by, and again, that's something that you can do by the small area games, and just letting the kids play. It's funny. I was talking to Dustin Brown the other day. He played in our charity game, and it's funny, just happenstance walking into Lowe's and Dustin was walking in at the same time. And we talked a lot about that, just like having poise. And it's funny because he talked about the younger players nowadays, and he sees it with his kid too. His kid's a peewee. But even the younger players coming up in playing in the NHL, he's talking about how they're so skilled, but they can't think the freaking game. Because they're just, again, that's USA Hockey. They're hammering skill development a lot, but they're also hammering the small area games a lot. And I think what people don't understand about the small area games is that's where you can teach the poise versus playing fast and the thinking it, yes, and things like that. So like, it's not all about skill development. Skills are important, yes, but you got to let the kids play too. And you got to let them have fun and let them figure the stuff out on their own.
Yeah, totally. Love that. Absolutely. Nothing to add.
Care to expand? Yeah.
And, you expanded it. I can't get any bigger. Great job.
Yeah, I just think poise is such an underrated skill. And that's what they asked. So, you know, underrated things that they wanted us to talk about in terms of terminology. So just teaching poise. And I just think it's so important. So you're up, dude. What do you got?
I'll just ask a quick fun one here. Drew Moffitt said, what is your favorite memory from WMU? So I'll tell you mine, but first tell me yours from Cornell, your own personal favorite memory.
Favorite memory from Cornell?
Yeah.
Oh man. Meeting my wife. No, just kidding.
Hockey memory. Hockey memory.
That's not, well,
you got, yeah. Go ahead. It's a hockey memory. But stop. Okay. Hockey memory.
Hey, there's nothing like winning a championship. There's nothing like winning a championship, man. And when we won the ECAC championship my freshman year, that bonds you forever. Like, you know, you're still on text chains with those guys and you still talk about it from time to time. And, you know, getting to come back and you know you're a champion, there's nothing like that. So I would say my best memory was probably, you know, holding up the cup or whatever the cup was called, the ECAC cup. That was pretty cool.
That's unreal. We did not win anything at West. We won a playoff series for the first time on the road in like 20 years or something. So like that was really cool. But I'd probably say my two favorite memories, I'd have two. God, it's so hard. Maybe three. I don't know.
You knew this question coming in too.
I know. Well, I was just thinking about it.
We could probably go all day, dude.
No, I know.
Honestly. On ice and off ice memories too.
Yeah, totally. I don't know. Being named captain as a sophomore was very humbling and exciting for me. That was really cool. Being named a finalist for defensive forward of the year my sophomore year, that was really, really cool. We had such a good team that year, so that was super exciting. And then when we won our first game my freshman year against number one ranked in the nation, Ohio State, we swept them on Halloween weekend and had the sickest Halloween party. And they sold out the rink both games, and Lawson Lunatics got the whole ring chanting "Overrated" like the whole game, each game of the weekend. So then at our party, we were chanting that. It'll never be forgotten. And every time "Sugar, We're Going Down" by Fall Out Boy comes on, I think of that party and all the people chanting "Overrated." It was, we didn't win a championship, so that was a pretty big deal for us. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, man, that is like, you go back to like memories, a victory song after a win in the locker room is really cool. And if you're playing at home, the victory song, when it comes on at like 1 a.m. after everybody's had a few too, and it comes back on and you're just going after it, like that's pretty fun. I remember that. Ours one year was "Take Me Home, Country Roads." And like our team was unreal that year. And we got going on that. And it was it was pretty sick.
Oh God, such good memories. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going back to Western for our golf outing. First time I've been back since I signed and left.
When is it?
It's not this coming weekend, the weekend after, July 27th, I think. Yeah, we're going to, a bunch of guys from my class are going to go back and celebrate, Sean Weaver, my teammate, my classmate who passed away two Christmases ago. So pretty exciting that we're all going to get back and honor him. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah, that'll be pretty cool. But I think a lot of the things too, like as we're thinking about this, just like little conversations that you have with guys that you knew you made an impact, like that's pretty cool stuff. Like as a captain, as an older guy, like taking a younger guy aside and, knowing that you're telling them something and then they're going to incorporate it, it's going to help their careers. I think that was also, it's kind of like a smaller scale type thing, but I think that was pretty impactful for me anyway, to be able to have that.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. Being a leader is always something that's challenging and rewarding and exciting, especially when you can help not mold, but help steer, a younger guy in the right direction. It's always fun to see that happen. So, what else we got for questions here?
All right. I got another one. This is from Meter41 on Twitter. With your recruiting experience of AAA players, how many estimate the percentage move on to play high level juniors and then onto Division I college hockey? That's a really good question. I don't really have a good answer, but I still wanted to, I still wanted to say this question anyway, because everybody has a different path, right? Like, I think that's the biggest thing when thinking about this question and how to answer it, because I don't know off the top of my head what the percentage would be, because it's different. Like you go to the Chicago Mission, it's going to be different than a AAA team in, I don't know, Idaho or whatever. But everybody has a different path. And, I know guys that didn't play high level AAA midget hockey that went on to play college hockey. I know guys that didn't play in the USHL or the North American League at 18, 19 years old, but they did at 19, 20 years old and went on to play college hockey. So from a AAA hockey standpoint, estimating a percentage of how many move on, like, I don't really know. And I don't really want to answer that question because there's just so many different ways you can get to accomplish your dreams. I do think it's a good question, but I don't know. And I think everybody just has a different path,
Like, are you looking at like per city, per state? Like, cause I'm sure some states that percentage is much higher. And then some's much lower. And yeah, like you said, it's, right now I got a couple guys that aren't able to make, or they haven't made two or three junior teams, are going to camps and they're making to the All-Star game. And for whatever reason, every All-Star game, the coach says, we liked you, but just like not enough to take you basically. And it's like, well, do you just stop playing, or do you learn every time, get better, and go to the next one and try and make that team? Like, you know, like then that guy, he could have quit and he wouldn't have been one of the guys who made it. Or some personalities will learn and work harder and be smarter and get better, and they will make the team. So, I mean, it's always ebbing and flowing. I don't really think that's such a tough question.
Yeah, for sure. And I got one more question here. I don't know if you have another one, but I have another one that I think is really interesting. And this is from Brandon Wong. Brandon Wong Hockey. I got this one on Instagram. Brandon Wong was an unreal player at Quinnipiac, yeah, by the way.
I hung out with him once with Andy Meyer, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they might have been classmates even. Or yeah,
the Wonger, beauty.
So he said, discussing about players with a solid SAT score picking between Ivy League and other reputable schools. I thought this was an awesome question and certainly have a lot of insight on this one. So as I'm recruiting at Cornell at an Ivy League school, there's three questions that I need to ask, right? There's three kind of boxes that have to be checked for you to play at an Ivy League institution. Number one, can you get in? What are his grades, his or hers? What are their grades, right? So can I go to the academic department? And how it works for Ivy Leagues is it's what's called an academic index, right? So you throw in your SAT or ACT score and you throw your GPA in to an Excel spreadsheet model, and that model spits back out a number. And if that number is not above a certain threshold, it doesn't matter if you're Sidney Crosby, you cannot be eligible to play an Ivy League sport. Right? So number one is academics. Can you get into the school? Because if you can't, there's no point in recruiting you. Right? And that's another thing. But with that, like, the higher your grades are, the more attractive you are to our school, because we can't get in. Let's say we have a recruiting class of eight players. We can't get in eight players right above that academic index threshold. Right? We have to meet kind of like an average, or there's a sliding scale that we have to use. So we have to, you know, get people that ours were called bands, that are high bands, really high academic, mid bands, and low bands, but they all have to be above that academic index. So number one, can you get in? Number two, can you afford it? So Ivy League schools do not have scholarships. It's a need-based merit, it's a need-based financial aid system. So basically your parents send their tax returns and all their financial information to the financial aid office. The financial aid office comes back of a number of what they think you can afford to send your kid to an Ivy League school. And that's basically what it is. So, you know, for some families that lie in the middle, it kind of sucks because you don't qualify for a lot of aid, but you're not rich enough where it just doesn't matter where you're writing a $70,000 check to send your son or daughter to school, right? So, and one thing that we always talked to recruits and their families about is that every Ivy League school actually has a financial aid calculator online. So at their websites, you can go in and you can, as long as you're truthful with what you're entering in with your financial information, you can enter that into the calculator and it'll spit back out a number. And that number is relatively pretty, as long as you're, again, entering in honest information, pretty accurate in terms of what you're going to pay for your son or daughter to go to an Ivy League school. So number one, can your son or daughter get in? Number two, can you afford to send your son or daughter to that school? And then last but not least, is your son or daughter good enough to play? Are they going to have an impact on our team? Right? So those are the three boxes that you have to check. Can you get in? Can you afford it? And are you a good enough player to play for our program? So again, Wonger's question, discussing a solid SAT score, picking between Ivy Leagues and other reputable schools, you know, maybe you're offered a scholarship to go to X school and your parents are going to have to pay $40,000 a year to go to Y school. That's an Ivy League school. That's certainly a factor that goes into it. So again, those are a lot of different things, a lot of different information there. Again, walking out of Cornell with an Ivy League degree is something that is going to help you for the rest of your life. Part of the reason why I chose to go to an Ivy League school, and I'm obviously not using that degree at all right now. So it is what it is, but that's a long-winded answer to that question. But there's a lot of different factors that go into it. But from an Ivy League school standpoint, what are your grades? Can your parents afford it? And are you good enough to play? Are the three main things that we look for as coaches.
Cornell. Ever heard of it?
I was watching The Office today. I was talking with Mikey Raja last night at our charity game, and he listens to the podcast, and he was saying how he gets all of our Office references, so I was happy about that.
What a beauty, man. He helped me get to Japan big time. So if you're listening, Raj, thanks, buddy. And then I wound up playing against him. He was like semi-retired, and then he wound up getting back into Asia. Dude, Asia was like the hidden gem because you get treated so well and paid pretty well. And he just kept getting in there, man. He just lit that league up.
He's what a so beauty. Nasty. He's so good at hockey.
Yeah, he's really fast.
Yeah, him and I are running some skill stuff together right now in the summer. And like he's demonstrating these drills, and I'm just like sitting there like, yeah, no, you're good. I don't need to demonstrate that one. I look like a total moron.
Watch what Mike's doing. Watch what Mike's – Coach Mike. Watch Coach Mike. Don't look at me. Look at him.
Do what he's doing. Okay, cool. Any other questions? Do you have any other ones that you have?
No, I think, I had a couple that I answered just when people messaged me. So, thank you everyone who sent us messages, took time to ask us different questions. If we didn't get to them, we'll try and get to them next time or answer you privately. Don't ever be afraid to, DM me or Toll on social media, whatever it is, Instagram, Twitter. Toll still probably got his MySpace up. So you can hit him up on MySpace.
I never actually had a MySpace.
Me neither, but I was just dogging on
eat
you.
Eat it.
Don't be afraid to check out Topher's sick shootout on some probably poor young soul who's just going to get barraged on Twitter for Toph sniping him, but pretty sick move. Always a good time to watch him play hockey and come out and watch us play in the Charity Classic because Toph will still be sick, no doubt about it, and I'll be pretty rusty, but I'll probably accidentally run someone over.
Oh, no, man. I'm so out of shape right now. It's like the first couple shifts that I had were very tough. I'm not even lying. I think I was -6 in the first half. We did 2 halves. I think I was -6.
That's great.
We ended up, we were down. Our team was down 9-3 at one point, and we came back and tied the game like 11-11 in the last minute. So,
oh, my God.
Yeah. It's funny, the charity games, like all the NHL guys, they don't really try at first, because it's a charity game. They don't want to get hurt or whatever. And then they get down, and then they're competitive, right? So they're like, okay, I'm going to have to get this going. So then they started going, and it was pretty funny.
Dude, I love that. So my first time I played like any kind of men's league or anything after being retired was probably in like October with the Blues alumni. And we were playing against McKendree University Club. I don't know if they're D1 club or if they're D2 club, but they're pretty good. And we're getting annihilated in the first 5 minutes. They scored a goal in the first shift. And we had out like, Terry Yake and Jim Campbell and Barrett Jackman and guys who are still nasty at hockey. And they're just flying around. And the boys are like, we got to get the energy back. I was like, boys, I got this. I'll go truck some kid. Dude, I trucked some poor young.
Oh, my God.
Boy. But guess what? We turned it around. The boys were digging it. I dove face first to block a shot like an idiot. We turned that energy around like you were talking about earlier. We had a great time. So I love when the guys, they were like, oh, we'll have fun. And then we start losing and they're like, no, okay, seriously, somebody's got to score now. So I know what you're talking about. That's awesome.
Oh, so funny. I love that. But before we go, I do want to talk about our player development conference in Chicago that we're getting jacked for. So we have 2 deals that are going on next week that we wanted to talk to you guys about because we've gotten some feedback and we also like, this is a grassroots thing that we want to do. And we really want to help out a lot of organizations and a lot of players too, because again, we don't want this to just be for coaches. We want players who feel like they can get something out of this to come to this as well. And so 2 of the deals that we're going to do, we're going to have a group rate. So if organizations want to send, their coaches for their coaching education part of their organizational duties. We're going to have a group rate for $99 for organizations if they want to spend their or send their coaches. So we wanted to lay that out there. So if you want to do that, if you're an association president or you're a hockey director for a youth organization, shoot me an email at topher@thehockeythinktank.com And we'll provide that pricing if you do want to send some of your coaches to our conference. And the other thing when it comes to players, you know, some of the feedback that we've gotten from parents is like, hey, if I want to send my kid, is it all right if I come too? Do I have to pay, you know, the fee to come in? And so we're like, no, I mean, that shouldn't be the case. So we're going to do a buy one, get one free for players and parents. So if you do want to send your kid, you know, if he has aspirations to play at the highest levels, and there are some kids that are actually coming already that have emailed me. But the parent, if you want to send them, if you want to come in and listen to what we have to say and listen to what all these high level coaches have to say too, you're more than welcome. So again, if either of those things interests you, the group rate for $99 or the buy one, get one free, if you're a parent and want to send your kid, shoot me an email at topher@thehockeythinktank.com and we'll set that up because we want to make people better. That's why we're doing it. And we got some feedback on that and that's what we want to do for you guys.
Awesome. Love
yep.
it.
August 3rd.
Let's get some butts in those seats. August 3rd.
August 3rd in Chicago at the Chicago Blackhawks practice facility, Fifth Third Arena. We are jacked for it. I know that the presenters are jacked for it too. I've been in touch with all those guys, and really looking forward. So hopefully, we see you there on August 3rd.
What time? What time is it at?
9 o'clock, 9 a.m. So registration starts at 8. 9 o'clock start, and we're gonna get her going, baby.
And then what time does it end?
It's going to end at 5 o'clock.
Oh yeah. So probably go out, meet some people after, but get a big group going. That'd be pretty fun.
Absolutely. We want to do something social afterwards for the people that come, you know, just kind of talk on a, you know, relatable kind of like, just easy going kind of level too. And, so yeah, so you'll be able to, again, that's a big part of the conference is being able to meet the people and being able to talk to them, ask questions, not just PowerPoints and sitting there and taking notes. But we're going to provide some great things. It's going to be awesome at the Blackhawks practice facility. And, I'm looking forward to learning from people who are way smarter than I am. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Super, super, super exciting. You have a serious brainiac think tank put together for this thing. I'm definitely going to be bringing my notepad and my pen.
Brainiac, but also really good and funny dudes too. A lot of,
oh yeah. Not like nerds. Like, no,
a lot
not
of
like the
funny
cool
guys.
Brainiacs.
Sure. Like you, right?
Hey, call me a brainiac. I don't think so, but, so yeah, it's going to be super
cool?
fun. Well, I mean, is the sky blue? I don't know, but no, but yeah, I'm stoked. And yeah, we should have some kind of social thing where we'll go somewhere right after and have some bevvies.
You bet, man. All right. Good stuff here tonight. Thanks for the questions and everything. I'm going to Mr. Miyagi this thing up right now. Make sure it gets out in the morning. So thank you for everybody for tuning in. We really appreciate everything that you've done for us in our podcast. And we're looking forward to another fun one next week.